It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Doing some shuffling this week. And we are happy to welcome in our friend Charles Robinson to the program on a Tuesday, early in the week. Charles, this week we head to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, gentlemen? I heard you talking this morning about your not Robbie. Robbie in his great health can go ahead and stick it in his ear, and us old men will we're gonna continue to complain about the tweaks and the creaks. And I have this thing where if I get really deep into writing, or if I'm like really hyper focused on something, when I sit at my desk, I have no idea why I do it, but I scoot forward on my chair and I almost sit in like a catcher's stance. Yeah. And I have terrible knees. And then all of a sudden, after like 4 or 5 hours of being in that posture and not realizing I did it because I just get so hyper-focused on things, I go to stand up and I realize like I tore like my MCL. I can't tell you how many times I get yelled at about it because I come downstairs like limping and it's like, you sat at your desk wrong forever, right? You did it again.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of impressive you could sit there for that long.
That sounds good. Terrible. It's better than gout, though.
Completely zone out on it. So better than gout, better than sciatica. So
that's true.
You might get sciatica from that.
You might.
Yeah, maybe. It's possible.
You might.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. So, Charles, obviously a huge day in the NFL yesterday. Let's start on the Myles Garrett front. So, number one, how did this trade from Cleveland to L.A. come to be? And number two, now that it's happened, what do you think this does for the L.A. Rams as it relates to the conversation in the NFC?
Well, first and foremost, like, let me tell you about L.A. Like, they have been buyers. They have been shopping like crazy, just not closing things, right? Like, they were absolutely interested in A.J. Brown. I think they just felt like the cost was too prohibitive. And obviously we'll talk about what that cost ended up being. You can see why that deal, you know, maybe didn't happen for the Rams. But, you know, I think had that taken place, then I think there would have been, Devontae Adams could have potentially gotten shopped by them. And so they've been thinking through some different trade scenarios. I know that they've wanted to add, Miles for quite a while now. And I think for Cleveland, it was, let's see what the landscape brings us. I think when they did the contract tweak with Miles, and then there was a lot of like, well, this doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean anything. We're not going to trade. I mean, yeah, it just was the tweak was the kind of thing where you're like, why would you do it if you didn't want to give yourself the ability to potentially move him? But there were also other moving parts. You know, Miles could nix any trade. He had the ability in his contract to decide whether or not he was willing to, you know, be traded to any team out there. So for it skinnied the suitors. You know, it wasn't just any team that could come to the table and offer something. Miles was only going to go someplace where he was going to have an opportunity to win a title. I know, you know, LA was certainly one of those teams that would have been on that short list. And approaching it from the Rams, let me give you the quick kind of macro view on this. For the Rams, you're sitting there and you're saying, we're going to maximize Matthew Stafford as much as we can for the next 2 years. Trent McDuffie, like, we've added these pieces to make sure we're absolutely going for it. We took Ty Simpson so that we don't fall off a cliff in 2028 like we assume we're going to get through the next 2 years with Matthew Stafford in this roster. We've now, the way that the Rams have built in the past, they have felt where, like when they built their first championship team, they thought of the team in terms of pillars. And they're like, we have four pillars here. We have Sean McVay, we have Matthew Stafford, we have Cooper Kupp, we have Aaron Donald. And whenever I would spend time with them, the thought process was, we're not really in a reboot until we lose at least two of those pillars. So what happens? They lose Aaron Donald. Cooper Kupp, you know, shifts, like kind of, you know, there's a downshift in his career. And that's when the thinking starts, like, how can we refresh and not completely pivot out of this? Well, we still have the two guys together that are the most key in being able to do a fast reboot, Sean McVay, Matthew Stafford. And this is it. This is the end of kind of that little micro reboot, because Puka Nacua has risen into that Cooper Kupp role. So that's the third pillar back in place. And now Myles Garrett replaces, you know, Aaron Donald as that fourth pillar. And they've gotten younger on defense. So there's just, you know, the backfield depth is good. I think they still would like to be able to accentuate the wide receiving core, really find a third, you know, player. But I think what they'll do in the aggregate with all their tight ends, they're going to run a lot of two tight end sets and try to be creative that way. So from a build standpoint, it's about, you know, this 2 year window. And also, and no one's reporting this, but I'm going to tell you, this is part of this. There's a creeping thought in their minds where they're like, we're really looking at, we want to win a title, if not two titles, the next two seasons. But we have a 38-year-old quarterback. There was serious concern about his back coming into last season. What if we make it to, let's say, the NFC title game again, and, you know, we hit snake eyes against the Seahawks again? You know, like, what if we crap out again? And then you're going to have to go into the offseason recruiting Stafford, saying, hey, stick around. You know, we know you don't need the money in 2027. Obviously, we gave you the money. Now they have another person in that building who is going to be a major draw for players to come to L.A. There are going to be other players who are tight with Myles Garrett, who look at this as a super team, who after, you know, the 2026 season are going to say, hey, man, I got to get over there, you know, especially if it's kind of guys who are aging out and they're still a little bit in their prime. They're going to say, how can I get on that roster? And also, it's a recruiting tool for Matthew Stafford. For Myles Garrett is going to be like, hey, man, stick around. Like, let's do this. This wasn't about 1 year. Come on, let's, like, it's, you know, so if they win the Super Bowl or they don't win the Super Bowl. And by the way, it also works if they win the Super Bowl, because I think the Rams have felt, if Stafford wins a Super Bowl, he could do the Elway. He could be like, all right, I'm good. I won my second one. Like, this is the perfect time to roll out. I think they want him to stick around. And I think Myles Garrett's going to be a big, you know, recruiting piece for them, you know, moving forward. So it's just about extending that window. He's 30, feasibly, given the shape that he's in. I mean, he's like the, you know, the Wembanyama of the NBA. Like, physically, that dude, who knows? It could be a Reggie White situation where we see him play at a top end where he, you know, I mean, Reggie White could have probably played, you know, till he's mid-40s, you know, and hitting double-digit sacks. Like, this guy is potentially the same kind of thing. And for Cleveland, I know fans in Cleveland are losing their minds, and it's tough, and I get it, because you're trading, like, a really just an iconic player of, you know, a guy who could probably win the defensive player of the year the next couple of years, too. All-time, you know, single-game sack leader. And he's a great teammate. But I think for the Browns, I had a chance to talk with the Browns shortly after the draft and just sort of understanding, you know, how the draft fit into what they're doing. And I think internally the Browns still feel like, okay, we're one more offseason away from completing this build. And fans have to understand, until you have the quarterback position resolved, I know this sucks. I know it's so frustrating, but it's the truth. Until you have the quarterback meaningfully resolved, your build is not complete. You will always be an incomplete team if you have an inferior quarterback room, or at least don't have someone who can rise out of it and be a top 12 to top 14 quarterback. And even then, you have to build a roster around a player so completely that you can actually contend for a Super Bowl. They're nowhere close to that right now. So the Browns are sitting there going, hey, the rest of the team's pretty good. We just had another good draft. We're getting younger. We're lining the talent roster, and we've seen proven results. I think the Browns went into this saying, if we're going to trade Myles Garrett, there's a couple of things we need. Number one, we need another draft asset in 2027, which will give us in the first round, which will give us some flexibility. If we have to choose a quarterback next year, we need more than one first-round pick. Even if the second pick's the end of the first round, that draft is deep enough that it will matter, okay? If it's the 32nd pick, it won't be a normal 32nd pick. That's how deep this draft will be. Plus, you get additional assets in 2028. You get a second, 2029. You get a third. So you're adding other draft assets as well. And here's the thing about Jared Verse. Jared Verse is a better asset than more draft picks because he's 25, he's proven, he's gotten pressures, he plays the run, I think he will finish sacks. They're like, he is a proven commodity who we know can play in this league, and he's not rounded into what he's going to be yet. And so even for the Rams to trade Jared Verse because of the window they're in, and I tried to make this point yesterday and Browns fans lost their mind, the Rams would never have traded Jared Verse. I think even if a team had offered them two first-round picks, they would have had to be high first-round picks because the Rams would have said, we don't need picks right now. We're in our window. He's way more valuable to us now on our roster than any picks. If we're going to trade Jared Verse, we need a superstar back. We need a stud coming back in. So to the Rams, they valued him as two first-round picks. So they, in the Rams' mind, they're saying, okay, well, we offloaded a player who we believe is worth two first-round picks, a 2027 first-round pick, a second-round pick, a third-round pick. That's the haul the Rams feel like they're giving up. And then I think conversely, the Browns sit there and say, we got a proven player who we know is going to come in. He's ascending. He's young. We have 3 years of contract control, and now we have the draft asset in 2027 to give us flexibility if we get into that position of needing to select a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great breakdown. I like it for both, really a lot.
I do too.
So one of the popular things floating around out there, Charles, you can either add oxygen or just dunk on this. Aaron Donald, is this just like internet folly?
The workout video.
Well, the idea of Aaron Donald, was it? Well, I guess Trey Wingo tweeted something like, "Ooh, you know."
Yeah. Well, I saw the whole workout, thing that, first off, Aaron Donald posts workout videos like fairly regularly when if you've paid attention across the board to his workout like his platforms, like it's not unusual, particularly in the off season.
Retired old man workout videos. This is a good idea.
Yeah. And I mean, he is a Garrett type though. When you look at him physically, you're like, man, that guy's going to, he probably could pick it up in June and go, yeah, I'll come to camp and I will be a dominant, interior defensive player immediately once again. And I don't even know. I mean, I can't even, it's like night terrors imagining Aaron Donald and Myles Garrett standing next to each other as you're walking to the line for an offense, right? You're like, this is just, you might as well put two tanks next to each other on the end of a line and go, all right, well, how are we going to do this? I highly doubt it. Now, that said, I know the Rams would certainly, if they felt like there was a chance to get Aaron Donald back in the fold, they would absolutely pursue that. They would. And, the trick would be, how would you do it financially? There's a lot of money on the cap. Like you would certainly have to figure out how you would do it financially. I, knowing the Rams, knowing some of those veteran players, I almost wonder, if there were veterans on the Rams roster who thought it was possible, I can guarantee you this. They would go, hey, we'll restructure. Like, we'll figure out a way to restructure. Like, whatever, like what's the hole that needs to be created? And the Rams have a really good, front office. They have a great caps, their cap team's awesome. They've been through this before.
They have a cap team? Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
Yeah, teams have that, don't they?
Like, it's a It's a scenario I'm sure they would love to invite. I just would not. I think a lot of this right now is driven by the the videos and stuff. Yep. And I don't want to say it's a pure coincidence, but I have not heard that Aaron Donald is unhappy in retirement up until this point. But adding a player like Myles Garrett, that can be kind of the I don't know, man. There is a fragrance to that that is very. You know, it's a draw.
You didn't dump cold water on this. I thought you might.
I'm not gonna,
I'm intrigued now.
And the reason why I say this is particularly over the years, you know, it's anytime you watch someone walk away in their elite years, when they're still at the top of the pile, also a person like Aaron Donald, when you've seen him physically over the years where you're like, man, this is just nuts. Like, this is crazy. Like, how this guy keeps himself in shape and how hard he works in the off season. I can't absolutely refuse the idea that Myles Garrett makes a call, Matthew Stafford makes a call, you know, Les Snead, Sean McVay, like everybody's like, hey man, gotta be a way. Like, let's, you know, this is, we're all in right now. Like let's put the band back together, at least with you, and kind of see where it goes. So, I doubt it. I highly doubt it. But I will say this. I hope I am completely wrong. And I think the only person who truthfully has the answer to that is Aaron Donald, in terms of whether he would even consider it.
So, Charles, A.J. Brown to the Patriots, and one of the worst-kept secrets in the league over the last couple of months. How much of a needle mover is this for New England? And how do you think this affects Philadelphia on the field not having him?
You know, for the Patriots, it's they've needed, particularly with Stephon Diggs, you know, departing. They've needed that. They needed a dude. They needed the guy where it's like, hey, we're in a, you know, a third and eight situation. We're not sitting here going, well, what's our? It's not a good thing for an offense to sit there and go, well, we're in third and eight. Like, what do we have that's the best third and eight? You want to go, what do we have that's the best third and eight? Also, what do we want to do with AJ? Like, you want to have a player. You know, it's that whole, you know, think players, not plays. Like, it's a huge cliche, but realistically, that is something that I think New England adds with this, where you get him back in the fold. I don't know the ball game now for AJ Brown. I would say when you look at it structurally from a contract standpoint, he's definitely going to be on the roster next 2 years. What is he going to look like physically? I think the detractors, the people who look at that trade and go, why would you give up a first round pick for, you know, a receiver who's this close to 30? And they say, well, you know, his separation isn't as good as it used to be. Like, is he starting to decline? You know, how many targets can he ultimately handle without worrying about any kind of injuries? Is he going to be a malcontent, you know, whatever, because of what happened at the end in Philly? I don't think there's a lot of that worry right now, you know, for the Patriots. I think they feel like he's healthy. Mike Vrabel's got the relationship with him long-term, which helps. The quarterback fits what A.J. Brown, at least historically, has been able to do in terms of, you know, the deeper routes. And that's, you know, Drake May is one of the best in the league at throwing a deep ball. There's just a lot of this that works together nicely. Now, to give up a first, the fact that they did in 2028 is that's the brain move, because we know the schedule, what it was in 2025. There is still a creeping chance that in 2026 they come back to earth. It was like watching the Washington Commanders in 2024 go all the way to the NFC title game, and then there's injuries and other things happen, and they crash in 2025. The same thing could happen with the Patriots. They could hit a tougher schedule, they could have injuries, and then that 2027 pick, all of a sudden you're like, wow, what were you thinking giving it up for AJ Brown? Well, they've preserved that in a great draft. They've kept the asset that was most important. The bill comes due in 2028, but okay, you can worry about that down the line, and also begin to gather other talent in the interim to make up for, you know, having that lost capital. So, you know, I think for New England, it makes sense. It's what we've talked about. I mean, we've wasted, you know, so much oxygen on this thing, knowing it was going to happen. Not a shocker in any way, shape, or form. And I think, you know, for the Eagles as well, even though the first round pick is in 2028, to get that a first and a fifth for AJ at this stage in his career, particularly, by the way, knowing and having prepared to get him off the roster and knowing that there really was no path to return, to get a first out of that is pretty impressive. And I swear, I will tell you, when it first became clear they were going to shop him, I couldn't – it was so hard to find anybody in the league. And I knew at that time they wanted a first out of him. I mean, so many front offices that I talked to just killed that idea. They were like, a first? Like, you know, for what he is now, for what his age is? Is he really healthy? Is he in a state of decline? Like, there were so many questions about that. But for them to, you know, for Howie Roseman to put it together and really get a first out of him, even if it ends up being a late first, I still think it's a coup for Philly.
All right, Russell Wilson going to TV. Is he going to be good on TV? But more importantly, Charles, is Russell Wilson a Hall of Famer?
Is he going to be good on TV? I'm sure I've said it on the show because it's like my classic line with Russ all the years. Anytime you would talk to Russ, I always call them the vending machine quote where you're like, press C3 and you know you're going to get the, here's the, I want the C3 of answers. And Russ will be like, hey, so when you want your teammates, like, this is most real
blah, body. Blah, blah, like, and here's a Nestle Crunch.
Yeah. And just like, oh my God, man. I don't know. I mean, I remember when he went on the Manning cast probably two years ago. It's hard for me to remember exactly when it was. He was good. He kind of ripped guys. Like, he was, you know, he was critical of what he watched on the show. And I thought to myself then where I'm like, okay. I'm like, where's this Russ when you need to talk to, you know, I don't need Danger Russ. I don't need like Let's Ride Russ or that guy. Like, I need like this guy who's going to be openly critical about what he sees in front of him. If he can bring that to TV, that would be great, because I think that's still one of those things that, you know, you listen to Tom Brady and you're like, let's get as much authenticity as possible. I think Tom's certainly gotten there. It's worth a look. We'll see. I don't know. I think a lot of people have feelings about Russ as a player, have feelings about, like, is he just kind of like a corny robotic dude? And is that what he's going to bring to a show? I don't know that that's necessarily married to how he might be able to function as an analyst. And it'll be, you know, worth watching in terms of like a Hall of Fame career. I think he is. And, you know, is he kind of on the edge? Yeah. I mean, he did win a Super Bowl. It wasn't the only Super Bowl he played in. I feel like he got robbed, even though he did throw the interception. It was a terrible coaching call in the moment when you're not handing the ball off to Marshawn Lynch. He should have two rings. He should have never been put like into a situation where there was any kind of a slant pass thrown at the goal line.
God, that's the worst coaching move ever.
It's the worst. Like, literally between Pete Carroll and Darrell Bevell, I will never understand. And neither will most Patriots players who were, you know, in that moment.
Yeah, Tom Brady on the sideline. Yes, I won again by sitting here. Oh, thank you.
Literally, I remember I screamed, what? Like, when it happened, I was sitting next to Dan Wetzel, and we're like in a fight, you know, we're reading our stuff, and we're like, yeah, wow, Seahawks won, you know, the Patriots go down, and it happened, and I was so angry. you throw out all the work you just did. And I remember beelining it straight to the Seahawks press conference because I just wanted to hear. I'm like, what is Pete going to say? Like, what is this? And what is Marshawn going to say? Like, this is crazy. Yeah. What's Richard Sherman going to say? Pure devastation. But, I mean, I still look at that as a game that Russ will never get any credit for it because of that last moment. But the truth is, he should have won a Super Bowl. It should have been the right call, and it wasn't. And I think he's a Hall of Famer, I guess, is what I'm saying. I heard you guys kind of talking about him, you know, he and Eli, and I don't think that's certainly not an apples-to-apples comparison between the two guys. I think Russ was a much better player, particularly at his height, was a much more efficient, was a much more when you just talk about the accuracy, the shots they would take, his efficiency, the way he played the game. Like, Eli was awesome in some great playoff moments, but he turned the ball over a lot, and I think that is certainly something that will always kind of dog him a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if eventually they both end up in the Hall of Fame.
Well, if he had his own office, Russell did, will he campaign for, like, his own wing in the Hall of Fame? How do we think that goes over?
Come on. Of course.
Yes.
We need to just blow out another side of the wall over here, and this is where you can put me.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
ESPN just showed the play, and Tom Brady, oh, yay, I win, I'm the best.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I've seen all the explanations of how Tom was never responsible for any of the 7 Super Bowls he won. The fans who hate him are like, let me show you why Tom didn't
best
really win 7 Super Bowls.
Nah, he was a really good quarterback.
Yeah, I let me tell you a super quick story. So yesterday I'm talking to Stacey James, the head of PR for the Patriots. Like, I've been talking to teams, and I'm kind of, you know, I'm setting up like a camp tour. And so Stacey James calls me. Obviously, he had known that, you know, I'd parted company with Yahoo. And so he calls me, answer the phone. And you know, Stacey, obviously, we know what's been going on with the Patriots this offseason. And he calls me, and I answer the phone. I say, hey, what's up? I said, how you doing? And he goes, well, I think I'm probably doing better than you at the moment. And I go, just barely. I'm like, hey, man, consider your off season. I'm like, this is you're just barely doing better than I am right now. But
it's debatable.
You know,
it's close.
You think that moment with Brady and all that, but I sat there and I thought, this dude has seen Orchids of Asia with his boss, you know, with Robert Kraft. He's seen Deflategate, Spygate, Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah. Good grief.
I mean, like, it's insane the number of things. You know, Bill showing up on a ring cam without a shirt.
Yes.
Like, his head coach and his, like, literally arguably the greatest coach in history, arguably the greatest quarterback in history, having a divorce in their final season, you know, inside the building. And then even, like, years before that, the whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing when they were at odds. And I'm like, man, this guy's seen.
I just seen it all, man. That's crazy.
You gotta let me do the book, man. I'm like, please. At one point, you know, when Belichick got the, I think it was the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Donald Trump during the first time, you know, Trump's first administration. There was this, like, I mean, Bill's probably gotta not accept it at this time. Like, this is just like in terms of distraction. So, like, how do you do that? How do you do that as, like, a PR, you know, like a head PR person who's been there 20 years?
Yeah.
You're trying to convince Bill Belichick, like, just turn down this presidential honor. It's really in our best interest. Yeah, good luck with that. And that's not even counting the day to day.
Exactly.
They've had a run. They've had a hell of a run.
They have, no doubt about it. Charles, thank you, sir, as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this week. And have fun this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson, our guest here on the program. We will react to what Charles had to say. Take your thoughts on the Myles Garrett and A.J. Brown trades. All that and more coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.